And a pleasant greeting to you, dear listener.
Melekalikimaka is the thing to say.
Welcome once again to Ottawa, This Week in Mormons, your place
Christmas Day.
To hear Mormon news, gossip,
that's the island greeting,
theories,
that we bring to you.
And senseless banter that really exists for our amusement more than anything else.
I love that everybody was like, banter is good, but not like maybe too much. It feels forced.
The feels forced thing I didn't fully get. I don't think our banter feels forced. I think we have to regulate it. You and I could spend an entire show just shooting the breeze about absolutely nothing. And
in fact, we spend like two shows equivalent prior to every show just bantering.
Pretty much, yeah. So if you really love the banter, maybe next time around we'll just hit record. And, you know, we could release outtakes or behind the scenes of This Week in Mormons. And you can just listen to us just ramble away about all sorts of things.
I'm actually working on a way that we can live broadcast it so that people that want to can listen live while we do it.
That would be wild.
And because really no one's going to go and listen to the TWIM edition of just Jeff and Al bantering.
I don't know. They might.
That seems a little bit presumptuous. I
think. It does.
It's like, here, listen to us conversing amongst ourselves. There you are.
You know, the other beauty, though, of doing it live is that listeners will really notice very little difference at all, because we don't really edit the show much for content when you get down to it. What you hear...
We're like a one-take master.
What you hear every week is just us doing the show. We effectively do it live, other than the fact I add, you know, music and, you know, sound bites and stuff after the fact, perhaps. But, you know, what you hear is what we record. Aren't a lot of secrets here. What's ours is yours.
What's mine is yours.
So speaking of banter, how are you, Al?
Tremendous, Jeff.
Really?
Merry Christmas.
This conversation feels very forced to me. I don't know how I feel about it.
We had a Merry Christmas.
I'm very glad to hear that.
I'm in the Midwest. There's a big tradition up here in Missouri area. Every Christmas Day, everybody goes to Far West. And we stand on the Far West grounds and sing all the church Christmas songs. So from 201 to 214.
Yeah.
And we just stand there and sing them in robust manner.
Every verse?
Every verse, every year.
That's got to take ages.
Well, it takes about 40 minutes. So you're just standing there singing some carols. It's like 15 songs. It's a lot of fun. Well, so anyway, it was like 12 degrees this year. I don't think we've ever been through those songs that fast.
In your
ever. There was hardly a breath between songs. It would go fourth verse onto the first verse. You wouldn't even know there was a hiccup. It was insanely cold.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get at with this story.
It was cold.
It's a nippy Christmas here in the Midwest.
That's what they're saying. But right now, our condolences go to our listeners on the Eastern Seaboard who are just buried under snow. The whole East Coast.
We love you, though.
I will soon be one of you. So embrace me.
Hey, me too.
Embrace me.
You'll be 8 hours from me. It'll be perfect.
What, driving time?
Yeah.
Less than that, dude. They've got trains back east. We'll take trains.
Hello.
I love trains. Trains and like public transportation. Things that we don't really believe in Southern California. I'm very excited to take part.
Or in America, for that.
Yeah, that's well said. But especially growing up in the Western United States, you know, it is cars or it is nothing. And as most of our listeners are from the Western United States, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But to our holdouts on the Eastern Seaboard, I commend you, and I look forward to enjoying humid summers with you.
You're going where? You're going to D.C., yeah?
Yeah, grossest weather ever, but whatever.
I'll be up in New York.
That's what they're telling me.
Should be a tremendous, terrible weather winter. Especially because I'm planning on being there like through February. So it's like, jeez.
Sorry, I'm planning on being there through February. So like the whopping month, you'll be in New York, you mean?
No, I'll be there January.
Stop it.
And then through
no.
February.
No.
February.
February.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm willing to make that commitment. I'm in a place right now where I can say, no, I'm going to be in this town
for at least 2 months, which is huge for you. That's, you know, I'm very proud.
You're such a jerk.
I am so proud of you. I will be in DC indefinitely. Who knows?
So
who knows?
So I haven't told you this yet, but for Christmas I got my parents. I had to get them a Christmas gift, obviously, and it was a little bit interesting because I haven't really, like, when I buy gifts, I buy them on a whim and then I just give them to people. I don't buy for Christmas or for a birthday because I'm not very good at it. Like, I don't do well with the pressure, but I'll give gifts all year long. I'm a good gift giver, just not a good, like, in the moment. So anyway, it's Christmas. It's the 23rd and I'm shopping around. I've been shopping for like 3 days trying to find something and I can't find, like, I'm thinking about my parents and I'm like, what would they appreciate? And there's nothing that they need, because anything that they need, we get them, right? Like, we take care of my parents.
Sure.
And what are what do you want? It's like, well, I could get you like a chump gift card or a DVD or something cheesy like that. But then that shows that I legitimately didn't think about it at all. And I had thought about it a little bit. So in my moment of brilliance, I says to myself, self, why don't I get them the 4.5-foot Marauder broadswords made by Nerf? And for some reason, this sounded like a brilliant idea to me. I was like, my parents would love these. You know, whether it was to spice up the marriage, the bedroom life, or like, I didn't know what they were going to use. But in my head, this all made sense, right? Like, it was all coming together and was brilliant to me. And so I go, and they're like $25 a piece. So I went and grabbed like the last two off the shelf. I hit 3 Walmarts and a Target on the way. Couldn't find them anywhere. Finally find them. And I was like so stoked. And then I get home and you can't wrap these. And so I hide them under the tree. And as I'm doing this, I'm realizing, I'm like, what's this going to be like on Christmas Day when they open these? And I was like, oh, this is a mistake. This is a mistake. I should not be giving my parents 4.5-foot Nerf fighting swords, a his and hers set, mind you. And so I go into my parents and I'm like, hey, I apologize for the gift I'm giving you. It'll grow on you, I think. You'll love it eventually, but right now, no. And so Christmas morning comes around. They give me good gifts. I got a new flannel. I got an Andre Rieu DVD, which I love. It was like the perfect Christmas morning. And then they finish up and like they'd almost forgotten about mine. I was like, wait, mine are under the tree. They're hidden there. And dad pulls them out and he's like, oh, these are great big Nerf swords. And so it was like the worst present I could have possibly given my parents. In fact, I can't now imagine a worse gift that I could have come up with to give them, and they hate them, and it's kind of a sore spot in the relationship right now. I'm not gonna lie, because they gave good gifts and I gave them Nerf swords.
Don't they secretly love them? I mean, come on. I know you.
I think they're gonna grow on them, because it turned into like just they both beat me with them. It was a beating Al session, and I see my parents as much younger people. Like, I see them in their 30s when I knew them as a child, and they were fun loving and jumping off of stairs and swinging swords at each other, which they didn't do, but in my mind they did. And now, nothing. No, they're old people.
But your mom's a sassy lady. I would think she would appreciate it.
I think she will. It'll and grow, I think she like will more said. With like. With grandkids coming around,
sure,
whacking each other with swords, and she'll think to herself, I'm glad I have these Nerf swords. Oh, this is a great gift.
I mean, whenever you get through your court proceedings and get custody of your illegitimate children, you should be golden. Bring them on by.
There's got to be a dozen out there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad that it was a...
Anyway, the moral of that story is give good gifts as your Father in heaven gives good gifts.
Yep. There it is. Christmas all year round, everybody. Christmas all year round, and according to my bishop, the season has not ended. And our ward is going to continue forward in Christmas bliss. This is why I'm leaving the ward, and I don't have to deal with it anymore.
Wait, are you going to continue singing Christmas hymns every sacrament meeting?
I don't know. We did yesterday, but obviously when it's only the day after Christmas, it doesn't seem that weird, you know, to do it. So it's only time will tell, I suppose.
Jeff, what will you do if you show up next week?
And they sing
them? And instead of the traditional New Year's song, Ring Out Wild Bells.
Yes.
It is instead Joy to the World Again.
You know, I don't know what I'll think, but I think I'll be okay. Because all I'll be thinking about is this is my second to last Sunday in this ward.
And dude, that's kind of a bummer, though, man. You've been in that ward forever.
Yeah, I've been around for a while, so. But life will go on, my friend. Life will go on. Go forward. Like I told you last night, I need to use my goodness to improve the lives of another flock, another group of people. I am like Mary Poppins. I go somewhere as long as it takes to get the job done. And now I have to go on as soon as the wind changes. And the wind has changed, sir.
I feel like I'm the same way, but my wind changes much quicker.
Yes, you do leave a big impression. You do.
Perhaps it's bad Mexican food.
There's no such thing. Actually, yeah, there is. But not in SoCal. So I think it's time to move on. We've been bantering for too long.
Now this is forced.
This is too much banter.
Also, apparently I need to apologize for...
Everyone hated you last week. I told you I would
berating, win. Berating everybody for saying that they couldn't feel sorry for themselves as a sorrowful flock of Provo Temple or Provo Tabernacle mourners. However, I don't apologize. My comments stand. Satterfield, as much as we love you, man, you got to get to those tabernacles. Go visit them. There's no excuse.
This is going to be great when you get married, seeing you in arguments with your wife and be like, I don't care. I'm standing by principle. I don't care.
I'll be like, All right, I withdraw. I'd like to.
That's true. There's not much that I can, you know, like say I excel at more than you, really. But I have had more, like, say, long-term relationships than you have. Let me tell you something there, kid.
I've had three. How many have you had?
Dozens. Hundreds.
Wait, what's long-term to you?
At least 2 weeks. I mean.
Because you can't fit dozens in your life.
Dozens.
I see long term as like 6 months or more.
Yeah, one would assume. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, enough with that. Anyways, today, folks, we have wonderful, actually not wonderful.
And you feel like I won't fare well in a long term relationship? Because I fare very well.
I'm just saying, you'll be standing by your principles, and all the while you will be alienating your dear love by standing by your principles.
Maybe that's why they peter out after.
All you have to say is, I'm sorry and I was wrong. And then all is well once again.
But to our dear listeners, you should go to these places. Go build some sort of connection to them.
I agree.
Okay.
Build Zion. Anyway, a lot of stuff happened this week. And, of course, the saddest one is our first story.
Man killed outside Utah temple had machete.
Yeah, that's harsh.
That reads, that's straight out of the Washington Post. I like that their headline is Man Killed Outside Temple Had Machete.
Well, because machetes are so, you know, they're not used enough.
They really aren't. It's kind of a surprise. Well, so anyway, so outside the Ochre Mountain Temple this week, there was a man, Daniel Pogue, who's 54 years old of South Jordan. He was throwing, so it's kind of, I'm kind of like rebuilding the scene in my mind.
Yeah, huh.
From the articles I've read, he's throwing his weapon, like he had a little altercation with a guy on the temple grounds, goes away, gets weaponry, including a machete, rifle,
no,
shotguns, plural, and multiple swords. I don't know how he's carrying all this first. But anyway, so he comes and he's chopping at the fence with a machete around the temple, starts throwing his weapons over the fence as though he were going to...
Go
over the fence.
Commando on it, yeah.
Charge the temple. And then the police fire a shot at him, or like they approached him. Things didn't work out. I think he fired a shot first. Then an officer fired a single shot at Pogue. And then as he hid behind a car, then he ran with a loaded pump style shotgun toward a group of people. And then the police had to shoot him.
Yes.
Killed him. He had more than 50 rounds of ammunition for his weapons. Kind of crazy. But then, well, so then they mentioned, they say police remained uncertain about Pogue's motive, but said family members have said that Pogue had a history of mental health.
Poor guy.
They don't, it's kind of a bummer for him. But it doesn't sound like the family was too terribly surprised. They were like, oh, no, he had a history of this.
I just, the visual of someone hacking away at the fences outside of the Ochre Mountain Temple is just beyond me. The one thing I get from this, though, is this is Utah. The man, yes, he was armed. Yes, he was dangerous. But in classic Utah fashion, they didn't just, you know, disable him, knock him down. They blew him away.
No, like if he's charging a group of people with a shotgun, you gotta finish that off.
It's true. Or you can disable him so he can no longer shoot the gun without killing him.
It's as a all man right, take who, both his arms.
As a
shoot
man
both his arms
who
off.
Has lived in these silly European cities where the officers only carry pepper spray and tasers, let me tell you, it can be done. It is disconcerting. You walk around town, you're like, hey, nice pepper spray you got there in your holster. They're like, oh, I know. I can take a guy down with this. This is hardcore.
It has up to a 14-foot range.
I mean, it is so different from what you're used to in the States of seeing officers fully loaded, and you go to Europe, and they're like, we don't have any guns here. It's just.
Well, and then you go to Eastern Europe, and they all have huge machine guns.
Yes, they're all walking around with AK-47s, getting ready to go to town. It is a sad story, though, of Mr. Pogue. At least I think they didn't release his name until today, actually, because they had notified. It took him a long time to find his family, is my understanding, but. So
the Ochre Mountain already plagued with controversy.
Apparently. I just wonder how...
It is...
I just wonder what was going on. I mean, because it was on Christmas Day, which is a Saturday, but the temple, of course, closes on Christmas Day. I think the grounds were open because, you know, people like to go to the temple grounds and what have you, and that's fine. But, you know, I just wonder how it lined up like that on Christmas Day. You know, there aren't going to be a lot of people there. I don't even know who he was arguing with or about what. We don't even know yet. And of course, so a lot of this is still pending investigation. No one understands his motives yet. So I think it's just random, too, that he went there on Christmas Day, a day when nobody's really going to be there. You know, it's not like he was trying to, it's clear that he wasn't trying to like storm the temple itself and get inside there and cause some problems because the temple was all locked up that day.
So in one of the other articles, there's like a dozen people that, or a dozen different sources that have reported on this. But it talks about, they interviewed two bystanders, Ron Ashley and Soful Yu, that were taking a walk around the grounds on Christmas Day. And then they noticed this guy, and he was unloading things from his temple next to the grounds of the, or he was unloading things from his car next to the temple. And Ashley, you could tell that one was a rifle, and you said one was a sword. And then he shouted to them, go home, three times. And then he was very agitated and started talking about the birds. Then he said, go home. The birds are coming. You need to go home. They were here last night. Did you see them? And Ashley said he had no idea what he's talking about. And then Pogue pulled his shirt collar down and she could see that there was something that looked like scratches or cuts from his cheek down past his neck. Hmm. And then officers arrived and yelled, get down, get down. Dude, have you ever... I remember one time as a missionary, we had a run-in with this crazy guy. We were doing a street display, and this dude came out and started drawing like mathematical equations in huge, like a very large scale, drawing them all over the street right in front of us, like around the sidewalk and stuff. And then he was like, he went, he goes away and comes back, and he had made origami out of pornography. And so he's like handing us like little birds made of naked women.
No, strong. Very good.
It was, but like we're standing there and the guy's just mumbling to himself, doing his thing, drawing all his math stuff out. And we're just like, what's going on? What's he doing? Birds. What birds?
So was that the one time on your mission that you ran into crazy people? Because if so, I'm very impressed. I mean, that.
Well, no, that's the one time
excellent.
That I ran into like legit.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
Crazy dude that was hanging around for a while.
I actually,
and that's the first and last time I've ever received origami porn.
Yeah, which is a shame because it happens to everyone at least a couple of times a year. So I feel like you're being left out of a wonderful tradition. One time, as a side note, though, in one of my areas on the mission, there was actually a mental hospital in the south end of our area. And,
oh, that's promising.
Yeah, it is. And of course, it's not like, I don't know how they get out or whatever, but yes, honestly, whenever we'd walk around there, our rate of running into nutty people just shot up like huge. Every other person we tried to contact was totally off their rocker. It was amazing. So needless to say, we didn't spend a lot of time down there, but it was amusing.
And we don't want to disparage the mentally ill.
No, no, we just want to lock them up instead.
But they make for some good stories.
Well, yeah, obviously. So sad times. We will keep you updated on the sad story of Mr. Pogue. And how I remember when I saw this, I was looking at news on my phone on Christmas Day. I was just sitting there with my uncle. We had a whole family get together, and everyone was like, "What?" There was no data at that time. All we knew was there were shootings at the temple. So you can imagine what that newsreel felt like. We're like, "Oh, goody, goody, goody. Some crazy person walked into Temple Square and just started
because we put it up on the Facebook feed. And yep. That's kind of what I was assuming, was that, like, people were just taking pot shots at the temple or something and got into a gunfight.
So sad that it did happen. Grateful that it was not to any greater extent than it could have been, I suppose. Silver lining, right?
Agreed. Yay. Agreed.
All right, so I was looking at some older episodes of Mormon Expression, that a terrific, basically the This American Life for Mormons. And I stumbled upon an older one where they had good old Jana Reese, who you might be familiar with. We talked about her Twitter feed. She's posted on a lot of things. She did an episode with them that was based around a blog she wrote back in July of this year, entitled "Why Are Mormon Church Meetings So Dull?" And the episode centered on that. So we don't need to dissect the episode because that's that. But I have the old... So I was looking at her original post discussing why she feels that Mormon meetings are dull. And Jana Reese is, she's no dummy. She's a convert to the church, but she has, I believe she has her PhD in theology or something along those lines. So she knows religions in the world and studies them and this and that. I certainly don't agree with every little thing that she says about why meetings are possibly dull.
That's not true, Jeff. Before, you said every little thing she says is magic.
Yeah. And every little thing it turns me on.
I believe those were your exact words.
I'm not going to utter the second line. Let's go through a few.
All right. Give them to me, Jeff.
Because some are founded. We could talk about a lot of things, but her main argument is that sacrament meeting has slipped away from this, what it used to be back in the day. And it's easy to feel this way if you read old accounts of even the early days of the church, of just crazy spiritual manifestations and all this stuff. And that sacrament meeting has become very rote, very predictable, borderline boring oftentimes. And now I do...
All right, I'll concede that.
But I do agree, like many apostles and brethren have said, and presidents of the church, that, church is what you make of it. That if you decide you're going to go into a sacrament meeting and be bored that day, you're going to be bored. But if you do go in somewhere prepared, you'll get something out of it. And I think that's the key, is Sunday preparation.
For the most part, though.
But...
However, to be honest, there is, like... There's something to be said for the content.
I agree. So I agree there's content, but I also think we can't just always... Before we get into this, we can't just say, these are things that are wrong with sacrament meeting that need to be done better. Because it does fall on us.
If church was better, then I would be more spiritual.
Exactly. Exactly. Because things do fall on us. If we do as we're asked and actually prepare for our Sabbaths accordingly, if we're reading scriptures and doing things like that before going to church rather than just checking Facebook and what have you, we'll have a better Sunday. I've always found that to be the case. So anyway, the number one thing she does say is that we no longer expect any spiritual manifestations, especially not here in the States, because we're essentially taught to feel the spirit is just sort of the warm, fuzzy, non-threatening.
I don't know why this is, but there really is an aversion to any of the, to anything, I guess, miraculous,
like
on
crazy
a whole.
Yeah, and even like I just said right there, crazy stuff. The first way we describe anything else would call it crazy stuff. That is,
In our personal lives, how often do we expect a miracle from the Lord, or do we go looking for it? I can't even remember the last time I went to the Lord and was like, "Look, God, I need a miracle right now. Here's what I need from you." Not that that works every time anyway, but the expectation it's not even there.
Exactly. And she says it right there, her last line in that paragraph: when we don't truly expect God to show up, is it any wonder when he doesn't? And that's fair. I don't think our meetings need to be these, we don't need to get all Pentecostal, for lack of a better expression, or anything like that as far as spiritual outpouring.
What if we had
outpouring?
More
but
shaking
I think at
the on
same
the floor?
Time, I would be kind of down with that.
Dude, that would freak me out.
I would actually
I'm not
prefer.
Even kidding, man. I'd be like,
I would prefer more of the bishop lining people up and then touching them on their foreheads and making them pass out. I think that would be.
He goes through like the people waiting to bear their testimony. He's like, fire upon you. Fire upon you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that could at least make it more entertaining. Right? Sure. Because in times, sacrament meeting, of course, is boring. So, number two is one that I actually agree with quite a bit. That she says, we think we're there primarily to learn about God, not to worship God. And then goes on to say that it's no accident that we call our Sunday gatherings sacrament meetings rather than worship services. And while, you know, that is just a matter of semantics, I think there's a lot of truth in that statement. What do you think, Al?
I concur.
Yes.
It really kind of irritates me, too, because, like, especially if you're the one that's there teaching, you can totally tell. Like, it's so obvious. Because you're there and you're like, and people come, they're waiting to be entertained. And they're like, this mm-hmm. is not deep enough for me. This doesn't entertain me enough. You know, like, I had a crummy Sunday school because you weren't, you know, you didn't bring your A game. And it's like, look, man, like, just come and, like, have a 3-hour long prayer if that's all you can get out of it. But, like, just find ways to worship. And it'll change your attitude at church dramatically.
Yeah. And I think that's the hard thing. Yeah, too many of us, and even if it's not a negative attitude like that, that we do go with this idea that we're learning about things. It's educational.
Yeah, it's not worshipful at all.
This is taking the whole, you know, and this isn't saying we have to,
well,
you
even,
know, throw
even
incense
the hymns
balls
that we
around
sing,
in the
like,
air.
We don't sing
like
hymns as songs of praise. I mean, it's just like, half the time, you're just like mumbling through it, waiting. I don't know. Like, I feel like we've gotten very, very casual.
Oh, see, there, you led right into the third one, that our music is confining and funereal.
Funereal?
We know how to pronounce it now.
What is funereal, Jeff?
Exactly what you said, that a lot of times the songs are boring. I think, especially being someone from a musical background, I don't expect every ward to just bust out like a professional choir or anything like that. I don't. But we rely on the same small batch of songs in our sacrament meetings because it's what's easy. It's what all the pianists and organists know how to play. We have an entire hymn book with 300-plus songs. I mean, do we, even with three
however,
or four.
However, you've been in those awkward moments when they try the new one that nobody knows.
And no one
and
knows it.
Terrible.
Because we don't. Because we took out the element years ago in sacrament meeting, you know, before we were born, they used to do a practice hymn as part of the meeting to learn the other hymns of Zion.
Yeah, it's...
It makes me sad that we don't do that today. I think that would be a great service because we have all these, and I agree. You sit there and they actually have the guts to bust out a hymn nobody knows, and yeah, it's like this complete failure. No one knows the melody. But I think we need to extend ourselves a bit more in that. We can't just sit there and be complacent with the few songs that we know. And it's even worse because half the time nobody even sings with any sort of joy regardless. We just kind of mumble through the hymns.
Yeah, they don't care. No one cares. They're there. They're not there to, like, and that's the switch, right? If they were there to worship, then you sing with, like if you've ever heard somebody, I remember distinctly, I was at a funeral and a gal, like, was singing I Believe in Christ with as much passion and gusto as her body could possess, and it was impactful. Like, her testimony was being sung, and I was like, whoa, man, this woman.
And I love it. Oh, sorry,
this woman just feels it, right? And like that's the switch from being worshipful and like actually meaning the words that you're singing, using it almost like a prayer or something of that nature, versus like going and just mumbling through it the way a deacon does. No offense to deacons.
Yeah. No offense. Well, better not. Deacons are the best.
Truly, they are. They're smaller than they used to be, too.
I swear they are. I was never that tiny.
Not
ever.
Happening.
But, no, I agree. And, of course, there's a fine line, but in musical numbers especially, between a performance and between, which is not good. It's not performing. It is all about worship.
Don't draw attention to yourself.
Song.
That's not the point.
Yeah, it's the point of a musical number is to feel the spirit greater and to worship. And I love that when people are singing like that. I have a hard time when people get up there and like pop diva all of these songs and this and that, because I feel like, no, this isn't EFY.
I believe in Christ.
Scooping into all the notes. It's just like, dude.
I
and
hate
the other
that.
Said Well, but what I like that you mentioned is what you said about someone singing with that much passion. Whenever I see the Tabernacle Choir perform or when I listen to it, the reason I love it
the
is
black
because
guy.
You can feel that is worship. Through what were you going to say?
I thought it was the black guy.
No, there's like three now. Ooh. They're on the up and up. And Alex Bouye is even British, so we've got a British black guy.
Did you ever see him perform when they went on their tour? I love how Alex Bouye is like he gets all the stereotypical like black southerner roles, and so
yeah,
he gets up there, he's like, well, Father Abraham went down, boom, 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 boom. You're just like, like, why'd he get it? What are you playing to?
Yeah. I guess what makes me sad is that you have something great like the Tabernacle Choir, which of course can sing in different settings as far as whether it's more performance quality, more worship quality, whether it's secular or religious, what have you. But yet, where's this disconnect between there's that great music and then we have all these really tight rules as far as what's appropriate for our sacrament meetings? Would anybody tell Motab they couldn't sing in our sacrament meeting? I don't think so. But yet you can't play trumpet in the sacrament.
Honestly,
meeting.
It's like, I don't know. I think a lot of that, if I were ever a bishop, I think I would see it more as guidelines and like, you know, there's the rule that you can't play any brass instruments or anything. I'd be like, listen, if you got a good trombone solo thing going on with Spirit of God, do it. Do it.
Sure. I guess we need to look in the newly published manual because I've always wanted to find the exact words in the handbook regarding what instruments are and are not okay.
It's gotta be,
I know it's in
good
there,
guidelines,
but I've never
though. Like for most part, yeah, people, sure. Like bishops that don't know, you know, what do I say? They want to do another rendition of His Hands by Kenneth Cope. You know, like what should I do? And they're like, no. You know, just stick to hymns. Yeah. That's pretty good stuff. Let's use that.
And of course, I don't. One thing I disagree with is I don't feel like we need to get, you know, irreverent in our approach and get really like hallelujah crazy stuff. I don't, because I like that. I do agree that sometimes we misinterpret reverence to just mean being quiet when it's not just
reverence
that.
Reverence is more than just quietly sitting.
That's
it's
true.
It's thinking.
It's a lot more
of
than that.
Father above.
Oh, you are quoting things.
Primary now? Songs. That's how I learn.
That's true. So moving on real quick. We've talked about this before, so we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. But also, our talks are often substandard.
Dude, yeah.
And I go back and forth on this one because there is a problem in that often talks are substandard. But at the same time, you know, we don't have professional clergy or anything like that. The point of the church is to allow everyone to participate in whatever way they are able. And sometimes that means we wind up with talks that are less than ideal.
I feel like we should have like a how to give a talk kind of workshop that the bishop goes through, or that somebody goes
really
through
should.
With whoever they ask to give a talk. And just be like, here's what we want you to do. Don't do this. This is good. More of this. Like that would do wonders, I think.
Well, I think what else would be nice is if they gave you an assignment more than a week or two in advance. If they gave someone a serious assignment, you know, well over a month in advance even, and if the bishop counseled with them I agree. That would totally happen. But if those who in charge of it stayed on top of people to make sure they were aware of their
ride
assignments and counseled
hard.
With them to help them with it, it would be good. I'm not gonna go with your joke there. I'm just gonna ignore it. Ignored. I think that's very true, because when there are great talks, it is noted and people pay attention. And I'm not saying it's like I've given great talks, but as I've given talks and been at the pulpit, you can very easily tell how engaged people are or are not. And when you're able to look out on the congregation, and I feel bad for bishoprics who probably sit on the stand and notice that the majority of their congregation is just kind of loosely paying attention throughout the bulk of the meeting.
Yeah, that would be a little disappointing.
Yep. Should we go to the last one? Oh, the last one's really that no one seems prepared to envision this differently. Don't totally agree with this point from Sister Reese, because it's almost like she says throughout it that we need people who are trained to lead the wards and this and that. But the whole point is that, you know, whom the Lord calls, the Lord qualifies. I do agree that we can spend more time working on leadership skills and how to give talks, and how to get people to do these things. But at the same time, I don't expect some sort of administrative professional to only be the people allowed to be bishops or what have you. I mean, please, that's just not the way
those that need the vision are like those, you know, like a bishop, right? If a bishop realizes that things aren't going so well, it's like start taking steps to correct it, and people will follow suit. They start to recognize that. If the quality of your sacrament meeting starts to improve, even by a slim margin, people mm-hmm. will follow suit and they support it.
They will. I do worry, though, like when we bring investigators along for the ride, that they have had these spiritual experiences and taken the discussions and praying. And how often do we let them down with our sacrament meetings?
Yeah.
And it's not that every sacrament meeting has to be this mind-blowing performance. But like we said, if we did a lot of little things better, we could have much more powerful meetings and really
to that
better
point,
spend our time.
I always am a little bit nervous when I bring anybody. Like even if it's a great sacrament meeting or if it's a terrible one, like I'm equally nervous, right? Like if you come to a fast and testimony meeting and it's like super powerful, but like people are getting up and they mention things that maybe you haven't talked about yet, or you know, like I'm always on edge with that stuff. And they always come out and they're like, "Oh, that was good." Like I've never had anybody come out except for one time on my mission. Nobody's ever come out and said, "Oh, that was a crummy sacrament," or "What a stupid meeting that was." The one guy on the mission, though, he came out. We had a lady stand up and read her talk, start to finish. And
yes.
he was like, "Seriously, why wouldn't you just print that out and hand it out to all of us? I could have saved myself an hour." And I was like, "Good point."
Yeah, I do really wish. I don't know what. I mean, it's not our. We're not. You know, we don't run the church or anything like that. But I wish they would spend that time to try to somehow fix these programs to get people to give better talks and prepare more. Because all too often, all they do is assign people, you have this general conference talk to give a talk on. Like, how are you supposed to give a talk on a talk?
What if the bishop had, the bishop assigned a counselor had somebody that was just like, "All right, I want you to give a talk. You need to get in touch with so-and-so and she'll give you the topic and like some outline on how to do this."
Yeah.
And then you could even have her like submit a draft or something. Like, You don't have to write it, but like give me an outline of what you want to speak on and I'll make sure that, you know, like I'll give you some suggestions on it. Like kind of a peer review type of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Like then that would keep people from writing it at the very last minute on Saturday. Like I think that, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I really feel that, and this is just me, as I've been in wards that either actually give speaking assignments based on passages of scripture or anything, or themes or what have you, compared to the ones where they say, "Give a talk on so-and-so's talk from conference." The ones based on conference talks are always weaker, and it's weird because I feel like I could just go read the conference talk. I don't need someone to come up here and just regurgitate what it says in a talk. I would rather have a topic and have someone give a talk and support that talk with their own findings and with other conference talks, with things from the brethren, with scripture.
This is
a never-ending thing, but there's a lot we could do better. Imagine if we had...
Give me your idea. If there's a bishop out there listening, I want you to try that. Throw it out, like, have somebody that's assigned to, like, test or to work with the talk givers. Try it out. Why not?
This will be my legacy. I will tell my current bishopric to do this, and I'll come back to check up on them and see how they do. That is my role, because I am like Uriah? Who's the one that studied the Ark? Uzziah, right?
Yeah. Uzziah, yeah.
You know the story of the Ark,
yes,
of the Ark studying?
Of
yes?
Uzziah.
Okay. Wonderful Old Testament story.
All right, anyway.
Great way to learn about your role.
Moving on to Mormon inventions. Da-da-da-da. Or inventions in Mormonism.
Inventions in Mormonism.
We bring to you two very exciting, very, very innovative Mormon inventions this week. One, and I love these.
Everyone's like, I wasn't aware this segment existed. This is wonderful.
For those of you that have been following the Mormon inventions segment, you'll know that this we traditionally feature various inventions from Mormons. Well, today is no different.
Yes.
Righteous bands, which is a play on silly bands, but these are righteous bands.
Who doesn't love them?
they take shapes like CTR and the temple and gold plates and pray.
Are you looking at the photos of them right now? Okay, on the main page, do me a favor, and I want the listeners to back me up. Looking at them in the bottom right-hand corner, one of them is green in that package.
CTR,
one at the very forefront. Oh, is that what that? It looks like an Uzi.
Oh no! You're just missing the C. That's all.
Oh, and it's backwards.
That's all that is.
Totally looks like a machine gun, people.
It's a special Ochre Mountain
machine
gun. Too soon?
Yes.
So anyway, they've come up with the, with this idea. They make little rubber band bracelet things out of Mormon shapes. And wait a minute, get this. Since releasing the product in September, Righteous Bands has sold bands to several seminary and primary teachers.
No.
That's right. These are flying out the door. They can't keep them stocked, probably.
There are dozens of us. Several dozens
is the phrase used. Several.
Sorry. There are tens of us. Tens.
Also, from the brilliant minds of Mormons, Scott Porter and his brother Bryce Porter have come up with a game they're calling, not charades, wait for it, reverse charades. A game in which, unlike the traditional charades where one person draws a card and acts it out and feels awkward, instead they have the whole group act it out and one person is trying to guess what it is. I feel like this is a game made by homeschoolers.
This is clearly a product of BYU.
Because they are against the one person being singled out. If you've ever, I'm well acquainted with the homeschool ways. I myself may or may not have been homeschooled.
You were. It's okay.
But like when you go to parties and you have the one guy up there in the middle of the signs circle as everybody's playing signs and you have the one guy, you can always tell the ones that don't want to be up there, the center of attention, they want to be at the party because they're trying to learn to be social, but they're not ready to be in the center of the circle. Well, reverse charades is for you. Make everyone else act it out and you will not be singled out.
Okay, here's what I don't get. Because one of the guys was this guy Bryce, one of the brothers who made it, says, quote, "It basically levels the playing field for those who are acting it out. But what if you're the one person who has to get whatever is being acted out? Does that not put all the pressure instead on the person who's figuring out what's going on?"
Could you imagine, though, being the one guy and you're like...
You're sitting there and like six people are doing stuff.
And you have
stuff,
like 40 people that are all being monkeys, like charging a camp, right? Like whatever the charade is, the... You're like, "I don't get it." They're all like, "You're such an idiot. How do you not see what... He's like, I don't see it. I'm sorry."
Yeah, with one person. I think the point of charades is one person
and
acts,
then everybody starts then laughing people, at you instead of laughing like a monkey. They're laughing at you and pointing a finger.
Because you're the one moron who couldn't figure it out. One. Therefore, you are embarrassed.
How did you not know what this nocturnal meant? We were all being nocturnal.
So when they really say reverse charades, what they mean is the embarrassment and chance to be uncomfortable
shame.
And look like a fool just switches positions, basically. That's why
I love
reversed.
The Mormon Times, also, the lead out line, "Misery loves company," period. But so does
I also
happiness.
Love... Yep, that's
I don't
classic
know if that's true.
Mormon Times. Like, really, they that whole first paragraph just doesn't need to exist.
Dear Mormon Times... Wade
no
Jukes.
The other thing I love, I'm sorry, this is sort of mean of me, but the other guy said, "It took us about a year to get through design, and we test marketed it all over the country." It took you a year to figure out how to reverse charades? A year!
I think I could do it with my current charades game, just explaining
it
differently.
And what design is there to do? It's the same idea, right? The charade is act like Glenn Beck. So instead of one person getting up and crying a bunch, six people get
whoa,
up and cry.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
It's the first thing
You're
that popped in my head.
Fire
I'm sorry. My
here.
Brother. I'm sorry. My brother, as a side note, actually gave me my Christmas present wrapped in pictures and newspaper clippings that were all pictures of Glenn
oh, that
Beck.
That's sweet.
It was pretty funny, actually. I appreciated it. So thank you, reverse charades.
Thank you.
A hilarious
this,
twist.
This has
on
been another edition of Mormon Inventions. I hope you fix that with some kind of a sound bite, Jeff.
Yep. Okay. Sure. I make no guarantees. Anyways, let's move right along here in our final moments today. There's a thing on the blog called Science and Religion Today, discussing whether Mormons can be distinguished by their faces. And we're talking from a very specific scientific way of analyzing facial features.
Were they talking like the stereotypical Utah kind of facial features with the inset
they actually
eyes
feel it's kind of funny
out jutting jaw, blonde hair spiked with highlights.
Yeah, a lot of air, lot of puka shells and Aryan dominance.
The bump
yes,
it as a permanent fixture,
surely part of it. But I think it's funny because actually what this one woman describes as the spirit that people have, ideally, others sort of pick up on. But this is sort of trying to find a scientific way for those who don't, you know, believe in or understand the spirit, of explaining how Mormons have that thing that, that differentiates them. And it is an interesting read, and we will link to it. And, you know, oftentimes Mormons have better skin tone and a more pleasant facial structure and this and that. But what I really want to talk about are the more obvious ways to recognize Mormons.
Yes.
You don't need a scientific thing. Being a frequenter of Disneyland, having grown up, we often play the game of spot.
Being a frequenter of Disneyland, having grown up.
Okay, that was a weirdly structured sentence on my part, and I will own up to it. But the point is, it's fun to play Find the Mormons at Disneyland, because Disneyland, obviously, given its wholesome nature, attracts families, especially LDS ones. And they just stick out. This and the obvious ones, of course, if you see kids with, you know, whole families wearing BYU shirts and what have you. But, oh, you can play the game. Everyone can play the game. We should all come to Disneyland with us. A TWIM Disneyland day, and we'll play Find the Mormons. Because I think I counted on the last tally when I spent a full day at the park. I think I spotted 50 Mormon families along.
Wow.
Not individuals. And you can't guarantee it, but it's obvious. Just the way they're dressed. Whether a lot of the time, a lot of solid, just plain solid colored short sleeve
tops. Maybe
on the
Old
women,
Navy
example.
Shirts, all matching for the
Perhaps.
Whole family.
Just you know, and it's good. They look very
non-worldly.
Anytime
that the teenage daughters generally. All have knee length shorts going all around.
Uh huh. And the moms and the dads, everyone's doing teenage business. And of course, the easy giveaway is, though, if they walk away from you, you look for garment lines on the women because they're the easiest ones to detect on the backside.
Really?
So, I think so, yes.
I'm not good at detecting garment lines.
Oh, Al. Oh, you have so
I always
learn,
do the feel
friend.
On the date. I'll Golly. Be like, have you been to the temple? Oh, there's the garment line.
That's like the creepiest thing I've ever heard.
Did you? When I was a teenager, that was
when
that
it just
the,
come up
that was
in conversation.
Is like when you go to BYU, all the girls are checking for the garment line because they don't want to date anybody that isn't a returned missionary.
And that's why you wear crew neck tops, so they just can't tell.
Oh, I was talking on the leg.
Oh, well, I guess that's true. This conversation has taken an unfortunate turn. Perhaps we should just end the show here.
I feel the same way.
We had some other things to mention, and I will do so briefly to finish the show. May I?
Okay.
What was it? Mormon of the Year. You can vote for
it?
Mormon.
Was it?
No, it's still
it
in vote. It's still
going
in voting.
To Harry Reid.
Harry Reid won last year. Go to timesandseasons.org. And you can vote for the Mormon of the Year. The polls are not closed yet. Leading people right now, Harry Reid, Glenn Beck, Stephanie Meyer.
Can we
Meyer,
be in there, Jeff?
Elizabeth Smart and Russell Pierce. I don't know. I think we're eligible. My favorite comment, though, for people who nominate Mormon of the Year is the very first one. I nominate Steve Martin. Because of the jokes.
Right. No, I remember that.
About Steve, you know, he's a member or something, Steve Martin. Join Steve Martin as Mormon of the Year.
Wait.
And then
look down at number 11.
Okay.
I nominate Mark Zuckerberg, who, if the rumors are to be believed, recently became a Mormon, being baptized, according to sources by Steve Martin. Even if the rumors aren't true, I'm sure some Mormon somewhere was proxy baptized for Zuckerberg's Jewish ancestors. That has to count for something.
It's true. Actually, someone wanted to nominate Brandon Flowers of the Killers, because he actually named his son Ammon.
Wait, why does
that's
that
mean?
No, we're definitely right. Mormon of the Year then. If that's all it takes.
That's got to be worth something, right? Sure. I've named my children Zechariah.
I'm going to name my child Zelf.
All of them. Okay. Another person who's actually, the poster's name is Donny Osmond. And he just said, what am I, chopped liver? Ah!
Da, da,
da. Okay, so Mormon of the Year. Vote for it. And I think that's going to do it for us today.
We love you all.
We do. We hope everyone had a great Christmas, especially, and have a happy and safe New Year. Stay tuned, because next week will be, if all things fall into place, another very special show.
Ooh, what a tease.
Yes.
All right.
We've done it before, but it will be quite something wonderful-ish for you. That's it. Goodbye.
All right. See you, Jeff.
Bye, buddy. Find us everywhere. You know where to do it. If you don't, then you should. But go to thisweekinmormons.com and you will be guided towards safety. And that's it. So thanks for listening, everybody. Have a wonderful week.
Whoop, whoop.
And be a better speaker at church. I'm just saying. It's all we ask. And all that we ask is that you listen to This Week in Mormons. Hey, bye. Bye!
I like to learn things slow. Shake.